Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We're part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Yo, 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 what up? Hey, hi, hello. Yes, huh? We are here.
Who stole Steve? You know what? We will circle back. It is fine. We are joined by a guest. First time on the show, we have Miles Ehrlich, a Liberty beat writer for Windsider, also co-host of Pull Up with Miles and Owen, a podcast with Owen Pence, also a W writer. Miles, welcome to the show. How are you doing, sir?
I'm awesome. Huge fan of the show, so just happy to talk to you both.
Huge fan of your show. Just a huge fan of you, generally. And like, now that I have you on the show, I can now shower you with all the praise and stuff. Like, you are just one of the best. You are the best interviewer slash question askers in the space. And I really
super
appreciate
uncomfortable
it.
Right now. Super uncomfortable.
This is how we get you. This is how we get you. You know, we small talk before the pod, and then I just hit you with all the compliments beforehand. But no, seriously, you have been doing great work on the Liberty side for the W period, but on the Liberty side for a while. Really glad that we are able to have you on. Naturally, we are going to be talking a lot about the New York Liberty on this show. A 22-6 record right now. They have been a really good basketball team. Shocking. Very, you know, fantastic basketball analysis so far. It's also been an interesting season for them. While the record's good, they've been trying to sort through some things on both ends of the floor, figuring out lineup combinations, implementing new talent, headlined by Breonna Stewart, Jonquel Jones, and Courtney Vandersloot. So, Miles, before we get into the nuts and bolts of this Liberty season, how much fun have you had this year? What has this year been like for you?
It's been super fun in terms of, as you guys know, covering wins are a lot more fun than covering losses in terms of going to talk to these players after the game. So it's been really great in that respect. I mentioned this a little bit before we started recording, but the transition was in some of the players that I really built a lot of rapport with were the ones that were cleared out to bring in those big names that you mentioned. So there was a transition there and a culture shift there. But I've been covering the W and specifically the Liberty since 2020 was my first credentialed year. So I've never in my life covered a team with, I've covered teams with championship aspirations, but never with championship potential. And seeing such a vet heavy team and how they go about things, like it's palpably different. And getting to watch these practices, they're basically all-star games, it feels like. And you're watching, sometimes you can get lost in jotting down, oh, this is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing these lineups, these players play off of each other. And then 5 minutes will pass and you're like, oh, they were just scrimmaging and I got lost in just the hoops for a little bit. And I'm not taking it for granted. I'm not taking for granted that like Marine was ducking under a JJ closeout for a step back three at practice today. And then the two of them high five after she switches it through. Like that's really just awesome stuff. And that's something that I've kind of learned as a reporter and growing as a reporter is like there. I was, you know, I'm live tweeting pressers all the time. And I sometimes just get caught up in what's happening and don't take a step back and appreciate just the absolute privilege that it is to cover any team in this league. But especially this one has been so much fun for that reason.
Yeah, I guess in what way have the Liberties have to kind of like submerge from your expectations heading into the year?
So it's weird to look at win-loss record because there have been some real peaks and valleys, I think, with this team. They have played so many close games, but a lot of it is the way that they've played close games is early in the year, especially, they would have a quarter every game where they would go like 8 minutes without scoring. And that is largely behind us, it feels like. But like it's interesting to hear the veterans come in and talk about, we just need time, we need reps, we need to build that chemistry. But to actually see that executed and to see a growth point, there was a point early in the year where the Liberty could not grab a rebound and they're second in the W now, but could not consistently grab a board. And there were stretches where it looked like it was Stewie saving them or nothing, right? And now you look at it and like, we're going to talk about Stewie's MVP case, but what might have hurt her the most is everybody else kind of catching up on the team with that building chemistry, right? Like, is the fact that you now are seeing, I think, all five of these players are dangerous offensively, and they're also starting to figure it out defensively too. So just looking at the season as a whole, you see 22-6, and you say, if not for the Aces, like, they would be the runaway first place team, and we'd be talking about them and just like, and obviously we still are, and we're talking about the Liberty enough, I think. Nakia's notwithstanding, but we're talking about the Liberty enough. But yeah, it's not as clear cut as all of that. And I think that that's kind of good, that the way that I've seen this team rebound after losses, they're winning by an average of 15 points a game, which is a pretty good indicator. You see how they respond when they take a loss to a team. They lost to Washington opening night and then had that big comeback against them. They lost to the Aces the first time, and obviously what we saw there. And it's just like this team is able to identify when things are not going well and fix them. And for Jonquel Jones to like turn her season around in the way that she has, I think is a prime example of just like, yeah, teams I've covered before have not been able to say, we're not doing this well. Let me just flip a switch and do it. And that's what we've seen a lot from New York.
Well, I was going to say the biggest compliment to you, Miles, is the fact that we got Nakias to talk about the Liberty two times in 1 week.
Oh,
that's
brother.
The big win. But I'm really excited that to talk about the Liberty at this specific point in time, because I think a lot of what you said is true. I don't think the Liberty fit in one box. Like, if you look at their stat profile, it's incredible, but also the Aces exist. But this is a team that has this talent that could put you in the super team box. But the way they've grown is not necessarily that route. They haven't purely leaned on just their talent, offensively trying to get movement going, defensively trying different things. We've seen different players rise up in different moments. So that's where I'm like, this is a really fun time to dig into the Liberty a little bit and kind of tell their story a little bit more. Because I feel like it's very easy to point to maybe specific talents or point to the market and how the team is constructed and say, hey, they're overrated. But there's a lot of work they've put in to get to this point. I think that's been the most fun thing watching them this season.
I agree. And I think that so much of that also, I feel like I have to say, is that the pressures that have come on are largely external, right? Like the Aces push back on this, the Liberty push back on this, the whole super team thing is just a media construct that both teams have rejected since day one. But the Liberty players have talked about, you could say that about the Aces because like they've gone and they've done it. Like, we are just trying to figure it out. We know that we have the talent. We know that we have these players that wanted to play alongside each other, but from the jump, they were like, you know, Stewie, the first action she got, I think, was that preseason game against the Aces. I don't remember if she even had a practice before that. JJ, obviously, preseason. Sloot had a concussion the first week of camp and came back right before the season started. So those were all the new pieces that they were trying to fill in. So, yeah, I think when you look at just the record by itself, I am kind of surprised that the Liberty are sitting at 22-6, but they could very easily be at, you know, 18-8, or it could be, they could have dropped a couple of those. There were a few games where they had Stewie bailouts early in the season. And that's why I think when you're talking about now's the perfect time to kind of talk about them, it's because we've seen Jonquel start to dominate inside. We've seen Sabrina fully commit to, I'm going to be a 3-point shooter at volume. We've seen Courtney start to knock down some threes. She was really mired in probably the worst slump of her career from long range shooting. KT getting comfortable. Benaija has been just kind of phenomenal all season, but offensively, that first five or so games, that was the big narrative, right? Was where could she fit? And now it's like, try to imagine this team without B out there. And not just because she helps them hide some other potential struggles and deficiencies in some of their perimeter defense, but also just like that, yeah, she's still a bucket. Like, she can still attack a mismatch. She still cuts so well. The way that she's knocking down corner threes. So like there is so much talent, and now it's being used in a complimentary way instead of in a bailout, right? Like, oh no, they're setting a double at Stewie. What are we going to do? Now it's there are plays being set up for everybody. And I spoke to Sandy today at practice, and she said early in the season, we just had to like kind of learn how to implement our system. And now there's more trust because the players know what we want from them. And also they know each other a little bit more, but there's more trust in one another that, you know, they knew what shot profiles they wanted from the start. And that was always at the top of their board for scouts. And now that's just second nature. So now the players are able to know what they want to do as a default, but okay, something else is working for us. Now we can freestyle a little bit more. And I think we've seen that kind of growth, even because they're still winning ugly sometimes, right? It's not like they're going out there and knocking down 15 threes a night, but they are still pulling out some of those games where things do have to go off script or they do have to make adjustments. And those are adjustments we were not seeing in May and most of the way through June.
I would say... for the Liberty's offense, are you surprised at all by maybe not how long it took for them to kind of find this rhythm? Because ultimately, even with some of the like the Stewie bailouts and Menijah having her thing, like they were still able to put points on the board. But did you expect a more seamless transition considering who the players were heading onto the team and some of their international experience that they've had playing together?
Yes, I did. I think obviously Jonquel was the biggest part of that, where there were just some games early on where she was a complete non-factor. And now we're seeing when you have to make sure that you're paying attention to JJ, whether she's at the top of the key or she's drawing or pick and roll game. These are the JJ's got her highest pick and roll numbers in terms of points per possession since 2018. So she's really shown that she's a lot more comfortable there, and you just have to bring so much attention, especially on some of those like Stewie JJ pick and rolls. What are you going to do? When you put Sab in the mix there also, it's just kind of a lose-lose most of the time. We're seeing just more things start to work, but I thought it was, I remember back in training camp, I think it was Sabrina said something like, we're not really worried about the offense. We know we can score points. We're worried about defense. We think that we can be a strong defensive team, and we think that that's going to create offense for us. Mm-hmm. And when we were looking at kind of some of the stagnation earlier in the season, they would go through these droughts where if shots weren't falling, that would start to affect the defense, right? And that was just kind of some of it, you could say like effort, hustle, whatever. Like that's what Sandy Brondello would say. I don't know if I would co-sign that because it's not for me to question how hard players are going after it. But mm-hmm. The frustration would come through. And I think that was just because they were still kind of learning one another. But yeah, like Sloot and Stewie played together. JJ played with them overseas. So like I thought there would be a little bit more chemistry there. A bunch of these players have been on Team USA with one another. So I thought that too. I also, but there are some things that like I said coming into the year, the best example of what Sabrina could be on this team was if you look at those Team USA games, or if you look at the All-Star game last year, where a lot of things are happening on the strong side, and then she's able to work off ball. And next thing you know, she's got nobody within 8 feet of her. And she's just like shooting in an empty gym basically. And mm-hmm. that we've seen a lot of that, right? So like, and I think that we've seen a lot of that from pretty early on in the season too. So yeah, I did think it would be a little bit easier, but they might be better for the fact that it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I think that because now they know that like, because it's going to get tight in the playoffs, right? It's going to be, these games are going to get closer and closer. And when teams are able to scheme against one another, you're going to have to lean on Stewie taking a turnaround mid-range jumper from the nail more frequently than you might have to now when you're in this kind of like open offense running in transition and everything's going well. Mm-hmm. But when things really slow down, those early days I think are going to be really helpful to look back on for what they need kind of in a pinch.
Gotcha. And just to kind of briefly zoom out on the Liberty's offense, they are second in offensive rating right now, first in assist rate, eighth in turnover rate, which isn't great, but that also kind of speaks to some of the early struggles in the year, trying to figure out where everyone wanted to be, what the hierarchy was, trying to figure out the pace and the tempo there. So we will see if that number continues to go down with Stewie, because I think you do naturally have to start with what she's been able to do. I was in the same boat. Like, I thought it was going to be a little bit more fluid heading into the year, just because, one, Stewie's incredible. And I think she's at work. Like, at worst, she's a top two player in the league. I think that's fair to say. But also, what makes her so special is her versatility and how malleable she is. Like, you can just use her as a screener, as a pick-and-roll ball handler, run her off of screens, post her up, clear a side for her, et cetera, et cetera. Career high in points for her right now. Not that it's a surprise that the points are up with the talent that she's playing with, but in light of some of the usage that she had to take on earlier this year, I think that was a little bit surprising. So I think as we've gotten further out from the season and Liberty is starting to find their rhythm, how do you feel about Stewie's usage in terms of like play types? Do you feel like Liberty have found the right blend there with how they're using her?
More times than not, yes. I think that there are still... There's still intentionality at times to get Stewie more involved. And I think that we're seeing those kind of in-game adjustments. The Aces game is probably a pretty good example of that, right? Where I think she might have had 9 points going into the fourth quarter and then finished with 23 or something like that. And there are games where things are flowing and things are working, but they'll still take the time to say like, oh, wait, we got to make sure everybody gets fed. We got to make sure Stewie gets fed. And there have been a few games where she just doesn't have it, where she's taking the shots that she's hitting at 90% clips and she'll finish like 4 of 18. Like, that's happened a couple of times this season. What has impressed me so much about her, though, is those are the games where she'll get to the line a dozen times. Those are the games where she will start to, you know, the mid-range shot is not falling and she's making sure that she's pushing a little bit more in the open court and trying to get to more spots. She's not often settling, even if there are shots that more nights than not she's going to be knocking down. And I think that's what I've been most impressed about with her, is her ability to kind of stay locked in play to play. That how many teams in this league have a player that you can say, we need a last shot, and you can feel comfortable saying, regardless of who else is on that roster, right, that we know who we're going to. And when, you know, you talk about the MVP conversation, I think that's something that I think about, is you could put Stewie anywhere on the floor and she can make something happen for you. And that's, you know, no disrespect to anybody else in the league, but there are only a handful of players that I think that you can confidently say that about. And Stewie's ability off the ball, that is where I think I didn't expect her to be as good as she is, whether it's offensively with the way that she catches in traffic, and is able to finish at the rim. Her finishing package is, like, I think kind of underrated for how lanky she is and how long her arms are. The way that she's able to get to her spots and also just kind of dive into the middle of the lane, which is always congested, and still be able to catch in traffic and then finish. But also defensively, her ability, it's not even just the secondary help if somebody gets beat and she's coming over as a help defender, but it's her ability to hedge and recover. And that goes back to a lot of her length, I think. But when we talk about the Liberty getting better as the season's gone on, it's her and Jonquel specifically that have been able to make that defensive impact. I think that's what Stewie is really doing that maybe she's not getting enough credit for, which is just wild to say when you're talking about someone who's top three MVP.
It's hard for someone that talented to be underrated, but that's kind of the nature of it with a team like this.
I've always said, I don't know if this Liberty team works unless Stewie is doing all of this. Not to say that they may not have arrived at the same point, but to have this level of success, she's had to do so many different things for them defensively, setting the tone with energy and rotations. Offensively, hey, we need a bucket. I go get one. Also post up. Also come off the ball. You know, just the amount of moving around that she does within their movement. It's been so fun to watch. Is there anything that people are just really missing out on as far as what she's done from day one in New York to now?
So something that I didn't know, I mean, I think that I'm going to feel this every time there's a new player coming in, is you just don't know the person at all. And the way that Brianna is an ambassador for the growth of the W while simultaneously night in and night out putting on a show, it has been kind of incredible to me that she is always willing to, because there are not a lot of players that have the capital to be able to call out the league on charter flight issues and have a large enough platform that they are heard, or to talk about injustices. And for her to be, you know, tweeting about BG every single day while she was captive, like, there's a lot of that I was seeing on social media, but to talk to her now, you know, nearly every day, and to see just how genuine, and NECA is another player like this, where she talks so much about the players before and how impactful all of those sacrifices were for to put her in a position, to put the league in the position they're in today. And then she talks about how the effort that she's putting in is going to then better for the generation coming tomorrow. Stewie isn't quite at that point, because she's like, I'm still in my prime. I can still have these conversations and know that I can benefit. I can be a beneficiary of the next phase of the W. Because she's what, 27? She's still got some years ahead of her. So I think that's one thing that, like, maybe is not talked about enough, is just how even within the season, and she's pushing those narratives. And I think Unrivaled, although she's not super invested in terms of like what that looks like in terms of its final form at this point, but her willingness to always have an eye to the league holistically has been incredibly impressive to me.
I think I just enjoy, obviously you're in the Liberty rooms and Liberty Zooms more than I am, but like whenever I am able to tap in, like I'm always impressed with just how much Stewie can cover. Like you can ask her a basketball question, you can ask her a league question, you can ask her about the family, and she just rails it off and just has this nice blend of like thoughtfulness and like some dry humor, some sarcasm she can sprinkle in as well. Like, she just seems like a really fun person to talk to, which I think is a positive, in addition to her obviously being an incredible player. And as you said, just a great ambassador for the league at large. So glad she's having the season that she's having. Let's stay in the front court, since you already touched on the Jonquel Jones fit and the implementation there. She's averaging something like 14 and 12 post-All-Star break. Has been quite the shift from what we saw early in the year as she was making the injury recovery. And just the general, let's figure out where these puzzle pieces go of the Liberty's offense. What have you seen from Jonquel recently that's kind of led to this surge from her post-All-Star break?
So, yeah, those numbers that you rattled off. She's also leading the W in offensive rebounds since the All-Star break in those 10 games. And she's had four separate games with 5-0 boards and multiple offensive rebounds in every single game since the break. She's also leading the W in rebounding percentage since the break. What's big, I think, is that in her last five, especially, she's fouling just 2.6 times a game. That was a big part of, there was a lot of talk about her foot early on in the year. And what JJ was really adamant about was like the foot she got past pretty quickly. The conditioning took a lot longer. And that wasn't just sprinting up and down. A lot of it was positioning. A lot of it was fouling. And she said, you know, there were just times where someone would get by me and I was just swinging an arm out and just trying to tag them on so they weren't getting easy points. And we very rarely are seeing her out of position now, or making foolish fouls, right? Just where she's trying to overplay and recover and then putting the team at a deficit. So I think that's really the biggest thing. The team will continue to say that they're not getting her the ball enough. And I agree with that. I think that the more you can establish that JJ on the inside, that's the more you're going to open up everybody else around the perimeter. And she's been really, really phenomenal. And I asked her about this the other day at practice, because I'm working on a piece about JJ right now. And she was really, really open about a lot of what those early struggles were. Now that she's like kind of hopefully on the other end of it, she wasn't just talking about I was playing well and then I was not playing well. There was a lot more to it. But knowing that she's kind of on the other side, she said that, honestly, I'm proud of myself. She said, you come into media, you say those things, and it wasn't as easy as she was kind of saying it was. You're in a new environment. You have moments, just tough moments, being kind of down. And she said she was just proud of herself for being able to stick with it and see through it and be professional and trust the process, even when things were not materializing the way that she expected. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, you get those quotes early in the year and you know that sometimes that a player's heart is not fully into it. You know, you're getting a little bit of coach speak and you're getting a little bit of just working through. But it doesn't quite feel genuine until you see a player kind of come through on the other side. And then they're comfortable saying like, I was talking to talk, but when has she said this foot injury, like that she'd never had something like that before. And that's scary, right? Like that's, and bigs with foot injuries, how many times have we seen that just sometimes there is no recovery from that? Mm-hmm. So that nagging doubt and then whole new team of personnel. I think so much of it is getting comfortable, just with the new team and everything like that. But to hear that, she was powering through because that's the thing that you do, but now is able to have a little bit of distance and perspective to say like, now I know I'm good. Like I felt like I was saying the things that you say so that you can kind of white knuckle it through, but now I feel good and I could confidently say it. And I believe it, so you're going to believe it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge difference.
Well, I think that explains a lot, because I feel like the Jonquel portion has, on one hand, been if they figure this out, the league is in trouble, with a little bit of, hey, what's going on? But they also tapped the button. Like, there were games, Seattle, early, hey, switch, post, we got Jonquel going. Spacing is great. We use Jonquel. And they just go away from it. And mm-hmm. I was like, this is good, but also, and they get back to their movement, and you're kind of waiting for them to come together a little bit. But as it starts to manifest and it starts to come together more, I think it's very interesting. I think it's very easy to point at her resume and her usual production and look at the box score and say, hey, what is this? But I feel like it's more layered, because defensively, I feel like she's been there for the majority of the season. Outside of the fouling, I feel like she's been an important part, especially as New York has been more like, hey, one of you at the level, the other one of you rotate. If we don't do that and we switch, please scram the other person out. Like, her and Stewie are doing a lot of stuff every single night. And I think offensively, if New York was going to build the base on movement, that was probably going to hit her first on top of everything she was dealing with. Mm-hmm. And so do we feel like it's more of a natural integration as Jonquel's gotten healthier with her production offensively?
So I still think that this style might not be, what she's built for, but that having her as a secondary piece or as somebody with gravity just opens up so much of what works for New York that you have to, she keeps you honest. And I think that's on both sides. That's basically what you're saying about some of those defensive rotations too, right? Like, Stewie is allowed to roam so much because she's like, I know JJ's there too. It's not even this is not just the guards saying I've got JJ behind me. It's also Brianna saying that too. It gives her a lot more freedom. And yeah, I think that like some of Jonquil's shooting ability is such a unique wrinkle to any team that she's been on. But then how much of that is better than her burying somebody in the post, because she's also one of the best sealers in the W, right? So like, are you giving something up if you're five out on a possession? I understand her being like, I can knock it down. I want to be out there. I also know it's exhausting to just constantly be living in the lane. I think that there are some components to it there. The tenacity with which she's been getting after the offensive glass, there's a level to it where it's like, how many paint touches do we generate for her organically versus how many she's going to generate for herself, which I think is a big thing. But yeah, you talked about like tapping the button. It reminds me a lot of Sylvia Fowles, her last 3 or 4 years in the league, where I felt like she would get the first, 10 points of the game. And then I'd be like, oh, Syl's going for 30 tonight. And the next thing you look like, she's like 8 for 11 and she's got like 18 points. And it's like, okay, I thought tonight was the night. And JJ, sometimes they'll look to establish her early and then kind of get into the flow. And part of that might just be the up and down tempo, because the Liberty have played with more pace as each month has progressed, and their offensive rating. And this was true a week or two ago, and they've played like 8 games in that week and a half. So who knows? But there was a trajectory that every single month they were moving up in pace, to the point where in July, when I was writing about this, they were behind only the Dream if what they had been doing at that point had been extrapolated out to the rest of the season. So the faster they played, the more efficient their offense got. And I think that might be a little bit tough for JJ. And that also might be tough for Steph, who's on the precipice of coming back. That's another adjustment that's going to need to be made. But when the Liberty are at their best, it's when they're swinging the ball around and you can have Jonquil down there hunting the offensive rebounds. And because you need a body, sometimes you need two. And someone else who loves to crash, Bani Jelani. And she's doing it from the wing. So the fact that you can't just say, I'm throwing a body at JJ because B is just going to kind of sneak in there and be happy to pick up whatever leftovers are out there, also brings another level of just dynamic secondary offensive play where they are the biggest beneficiaries.
I think that's probably been the most underrated portion of the Liberty season for me. I think just the way they crashed offensive glass. Like, you have the natural, we have to figure this out period as they're trying to mix in all these pieces. It kind of helps to just have extra cracks at it. Mm-hmm. If your first possession doesn't flow correctly, now you just have Jonquil like, okay, we saved it. Like, you ultimately want to find that flow and you want to find that blend. And I guess just within the JJ context, I think the best version of the Liberty will be when they're, like Steve said, whenever to bring that together.
And you're kicking out to players. Like, this is also the team that's on pace to shatter the 3-point record, right? Yes. So like, it's broken plays, second opportunities that now good luck finding Sabrina and good luck finding Stewie on the perimeter, and they're players that are ready to just kind of throw that thing right back up there.
Yeah, and they're all so good at relocating is the fun part. Like, you can't really keep, you have the talent, so you're already scared to help off. But mm-hmm. then you're also scared to help off because, shoot, they may be in the corner. They're lifting to the wing now. Or in the case of Anaya, I may be in the corner. Now I'm just cutting behind you if you have to tag this role or something like that.
Or it's, Sabrina, if she's getting back in transition and then she's like, oh, let me stop and I'll just pull up from 30 feet. And it's like, okay, cool. Good luck defending that as a secondary defense.
I also think we may sleep on how Jonquil's versatility helps them. Because, hey, it may not be the automatics for Jonquil every single time, but as you mentioned, like, she might be setting a stagger and now a pin down to a post up, or she might be spacing, or she might be in pick and roll. So it's like, your defense doesn't necessarily always get the, this is what they're doing, type B. And I think I think Jonquil's just been so important on both ends for him. So I wanted to give her a salute.
Absolutely. Indeed. Yeah. So happy. And just, she's also a tremendous person, and like seeing her just have this success and a little bit of weight off her shoulders and feel like she's making the impact that she was brought in to make. It's validating for her. It's validating for obviously the Liberty organization. But yeah, we were talking about just like as media, not necessarily being fans of a team, but there are some of these players that you can't help but root for. And JJ is, you know, at or near the top of every list.
She's one of them for sure. And just to your earlier point about the team even acknowledging, like, we think we can get JJ the ball more. There have been 10 games in which Jonquel Jones has logged at least 10 shot attempts. The Liberty are 10-0 in those basketball games. So whether it's her self-starting with offensive rebounds or those deep seals or them actually running things for her, there is a pretty stark correlation to her being involved in the Liberty winning game. So if they're able to find that balance, it gets scary for the rest of the league, or rather it gets scarier for the rest of the league, considering the Liberty are in the lead offense, second best record in the league right now. So worth keeping an eye on that for sure. As we were just talking briefly about Sabrina and her floor spacing, this has been such an interesting Sabrina Ionescu season. The box score numbers are good. The three-point shooting has been insane. Inside the arc, not so much. There has been a role shift in addition to, again, you're implementing Breonna Stewart, you're implementing Jonquel Jones, you're implementing Courtney Vandersloot. So some of those ball handling reps are going away. How have you felt like Sabrina has managed all the changes within her role offensively?
Well, on court and off court are two very, I think that they end up at the same conclusion, but two very different things. Off court, I think there was a lot of talk before the season started about Sabrina, like this no longer being her team, and how is she going to respond to that? Because she was basically handed the keys as a rookie, right? Like they shipped Tina out and they said, like, this is your time. And then she gets hurt early, but still, like, since the inception of the Sabrina Ionescu era Liberty, this was supposed to be her team. And I want to, on record, and I've said this in a couple places now, but just say that, like, I have never seen her happier than I have this entire season. She is having so much fun. She is... And you know, part of that was the media training and stuff that I think that she came in with, that like that Kobe business mentality stuff, right? Where she came in super polished, right? Where you could not get anything out of her. And I think she took pride in that. She took pride in leaving a presser where you didn't really get much from her. Now she's joking, she's having fun. And it's been that way like since training camp. It was like a pressure was taken off her where she's happy that she was not, you know, getting double teams or getting the best defenders on her. And it wasn't like, she's also just by her nature, not a selfish player. She was always looking to generate looks, and there weren't always recipients for some of those dimes that she was dropping. But she always saw herself as a combo guard, which is also kind of a little bit strange refreshing. In terms of just a lot of players will want to be a point guard. They'll want to be the quarterback of the offense. But she really identifies her own strengths pretty well. And because of that, the way that she's been able to take that into on court, especially because for her, she also started a little bit slow, right? The last month and a half, around the time, I think she is a player that sometimes it feels like is driven by some narrative, because it was around the time that 19th best guard in the league vote by the players came out. And then she goes up another level when that discourse around the 2K cover comes out. And those are like the arbitrary benchmarks that somehow seem to look at as her season is growing. But I think that's also when the Liberty started clicking. So there's that as well. But on court, yeah, she has not been finishing well inside the paint, inside the arc, right? I think it was 29% going into the Aces game, but then she made 6 of 9 or 6 of 10 in that game inside the arc. So like that number went up to 32 or around that range. And that's still it's wild. You're not used to seeing players' percentages being pulled up by their three-point efficiency. But yeah, she's to be shooting as many attempts as she is a game at volume as she is, and to be 44% from deep. These aren't just the open threes that I was kind of talking about, alluding to earlier. Some of these heat check threes that she takes are just like rhythm shots when she's feeling it. And they're some of the threes we see Jewel Lloyd take or Arike take, right? Like that she's a shooter and she's very confident. But she also kind of knows that there are some games she's going to go out there and be a facilitator. Some games Stewie's got it, or JJ has a huge mismatch and is going off. Or, you know, there have been stretches where she'll make three passes to a cutting Banija in like a 3-minute stretch. Mm-hmm. So she really lets the game come to her a lot more. And that's been a growth I've seen. It's not just the growth from, you know, knocking down more shots, because it is well documented that she is a shooter that can knock down shots. But it's some of that growth off the court in terms of just finding her role. And it's the growth on the court in just being like, I've got very capable teammates out here. And sometimes that generates the look for me. Sometimes that means I'm generating the look for them. So the Liberty, I think, are very happy with what they've gotten from Sab this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to ask, do you wonder, or do you think sometimes if that mindset takes away some of the driving when it comes to a pick and roll or something like that, just because she's not always going to explore every option, like we saw in the Aces game, like we saw sometimes in the Lynx game, where I'm coming off pick and roll, you're in a drop, I'm going to take another dribble, drive, and kick. It may be two dribbles, kick, let's me get off it. Now I space, and now I get a pass because I'm open, because we created an advantage. Do you think that plays into it, or is this just the natural evolution of what the Liberty are doing?
So I asked Sandy about that earlier today, actually, about what she saw from Sab attacking so much against the Aces. And there also aren't a lot of times where she's the bigger player, where she was using her physicality and her strength. But Sandy brought up that she got blocked a lot earlier in the season when she was trying to play downhill more, when she was trying to get to the rim. And they've been working a lot on pull-ups and on floaters, the floater that we're starting to see a little bit more. So that's an adjustment, because coming into this season, Sabrina had said that she worked a lot on her lower body strength. And that was quicker first step and defense. That was what she said her priorities were. But when she was getting to the rim, defenses were still able to recover, even when she was making that drive. And I think the place that we've seen it the most is look at the games that go into overtime. Sabrina has hit multiple threes in both of the Liberty overtime wins this season. When everyone else looks like they've got dead legs, she's out there. She could just keep shooting all day. Mm-hmm. And the game that they lost against the Lynx on the second half of that back-to-back, she ended up, I think, with 31 points in that game, where she was hitting a bunch of threes in that one too. So like, in a league where you are among the best conditioned athletes playing basketball in the world, that's where Sabrina really looks like she's kind of taken another step. But I don't know that that's helped her so much inside the arc as it has outside it. And sometimes, I guess, when that shot's falling, like, there is a certain amount, there's a certain thing where you're like, should I keep on driving at Rebecca Allen in the paint, or should I be popping back out?
Oh man.
Which, I mean, the numbers would certainly back that up. Like, she's shooting over 44% from three on over 8 attempts.
Yeah.
Like, that's not just great shooting. This is literally historic shooting. Like, there have been 7 players in W history to shoot above 40% from three on more than 6 attempts. And I think Katie Smith has the current record, or had coming into the year, had the current record, shooting a shade over 43%. Sabrina is shooting a full percentage point better on 2 more attempts.
Yeah.
And as you alluded to, Miles, like, it's not just spot ups for her. It's just a pump sidestep. Let me get this to go. This is coming off of screens. These are these deep pull ups that she's taking. Like, it's genuinely one of the most ridiculous extended shooting performances that I've ever seen from a player. And, you know, Steve and I, we were talking about the 3-point contest and how absolutely absurd that was. Miles, you were in the building for that.
Yeah, yeah. That was, I don't think I noticed in real time. I was just kind of counting as they were going down and just trying to stay locked in on what shot was coming next. But yeah, that was, the ball was in her hand before the before it was going through the net, before the previous shot was going through the net. She was just locked in. And the, I think the lasting image I've had from that, because we were by the final rack. So the lasting image for that from me was she misses the final shot on the second to last rack. And she is laughing as she comes to the final, to her final five shots. And because she was just, she knew she was so locked in. And so even that, where she has that, like that momentary lapse in concentration where she could break. And then she locks back in and hits those last five shots. It was absurd. I've never seen a shooting performance like that. And it was, yeah. And just everything that kind of goes into that, because that was, yeah, another moment when you look at the where the discourse was in terms of the SAB narrative. And yeah, there's also conversations to be had about that and about how the league or the league partners chooses to front certain players. But in terms of like what Sabrina is doing in terms of talking her talk on the court, I think she's answered a lot of questions.
She is backing it up for sure. Averaging 18.77 post All-Star break. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was going to ask the narrative question for you, Nikias.
Okay.
Trying to help you out, you know, do my contractual obligations. With Sabrina's defense, there's the narrative and there's the question marks, and there are matchups where teams have decided, hey, we're going to go directly at you. Is there any growth you've seen on that end to where this is something that the Liberty can manage going forward and in the playoffs? Because obviously it's been a talking point, something she's focused on. Is there anything that we're missing out on as far as the effort goes?
I will say that I think that the growth from the backside help that we've seen from JJ and from Stewie helps. But Sabrina also has, it feels like the last few weeks at least, has done a much better job of keeping primary defenders in front. But also when she gets onto some of these switches, knowing when to bail is a very important thing. Knowing when to call for help, knowing when to switch. But she hangs in on a lot. And the Liberty have gone to so much more switching lately. And I think that is, look at where they were the first time they played the Aces, right? Where what that had meant at the time was that other teams were able to be the aggressors and say, if you're going to switch, we're going to get the matchups we want. Where now part of the growing chemistry is we can hang in there long enough that we can make an adjustment on the fly. And that's not to say that like they are, because I don't think that they're hiding SAB really, which is something that they probably earlier in the year looked like needed to do at times. But there's a trust there that, because the effort's always there, right? Like she's not someone who's going out there and just taking a swipe and then letting people drive past her. The effort's there. I think there's just been growth in that respect in terms of trusting the system, in terms of trusting that there's always kind of somebody beside her or, you know, behind her. And it's for sure still a work in progress. And I think that that'll continue to be a narrative for probably years to come. But that I will say that this is not something that is a foreign conversation to her. It's something that she does take pride in and is working on actively. Gotcha. Which only goes so far, right? Like you can want it more than anybody else, but like the execution obviously is what's most important. But I do think we've seen growth from all the Liberty guards, to be honest. I think we've seen some growth from Courtney too, because that was an area where they were exploited a little more too. And Courtney's hands are really, really good, even when she does get beat so many times. And this was something I'd heard a couple of years back when she was on the Sky, that James Wade loved to track deflections and that Sloot was always like at the top of all those lists. And I've seen that a lot of like defensive resets just based on Courtney poking it away or getting beat and then knocking it off of somebody's leg. So yeah, obviously the Liberty would prefer if she didn't get beat so frequently that she needs to be in those kind of home run scenarios. But when you're talking about both Courtney and Sabrina, I think like their ability to stay in front and just, you know, keep that clock moving down is really important for all the extra help that comes, all of the hard shows and stuff that they've been doing more frequently recently.
I think the Liberty in general have done a really good job of like insulating the guards as much as they can. Because I do think, you know, as we've all kind of alluded to, there are the stretches or the matchups where teams are like, okay, well, we're just not going to run anything. We're just going to drive and see what happens. Like, we saw that a lot in the first Aces matchup. We've seen that in a Mystics matchup or two, where you can just do that. But I think overall, as we can turn this into like a broader conversation about the Liberty's defense, they've just done a really good job. Like, it's a nice mix of aggression with having Jonquel at the level or having Stewie at the level. And also the switching, just to make sure, okay, we're going to flatten things out. We don't want y'all to create advantages. And then we'll try to scram from there. And as you've spoken about the growth from Sabrina, knowing how long to hold and when to release and when to get out of there. Like, that chemistry and that connectivity getting better. I like how they've been able to match that together. The Liberty are third in defensive rating this year. Like, I don't think...
that floors you, didn't it, bud?
I don't think many would have had that on the bingo card. You know, like, as Steve and I talked about the Liberty before the season, like, duh, there's a lot of talent. They could be really freaking good if they stay healthy, they were to blend it together. For me, I kind of had it in my head, like, Stewie's going to help, depending on which version of JJ we get defensively, that's obviously going to help quite a bit. But, like, I saw them kind of like last year's Aces, where they had the best offense and, like, maybe fifth or sixth in defensive rating. And that's going to be good enough to get them to where they want to get to. I didn't see third. Like, they've kind of been hovering around third or fourth all year long. Even as we've had like the glimpses of, oh, these guards might be in trouble, or hey, Jonquel may be in foul trouble, or here comes the bench, what are the bench bigs going to do? The fact that they've consistently been in the top third of the league in defensive rating has been really impressive and has just kind of flown under the radar this year. What were your general expectations for their defense heading into the season?
So that was where I was with you too, where JJ and Stewie were a big part of it, and KT coming in also.
Yes.
But in my mind, KT and then losing Beck kind of canceled each other out in a sense, in terms of just what they're very different defenders, but just in terms of having a plus defender that can guard multiple positions and just, you know, you can bring in a pinch to just add an extra defender out there. But also Tosh was kind of the centerpiece of the Liberty's defense for the last few years. And she was undersized as a five, but in terms of what she was able to do for them athletically was really, really important. So JJ was very, very different. And I thought like Stewie could do a lot of like being a longer version of Tosh in certain ways. But yeah, I don't know if I thought that they would be at this point because of some of the question marks in the backcourt defensively. Though you look back to since Banaja got here and she has been put into that role where we need a stopper. We need somebody to slow down a Kelsey Mitchell, right? And B has always been the one who's been up for that task. So in terms of if you said last year, that their best defenders were Natasha Howard and Banaja Laney, and now you're saying coming into this year, you're basically adding another big to that. Mm-hmm. I could see an improvement, but yeah, look at where the Liberty were in net rating last year defensively, and that jump to three feels like a lot higher than I would have expected.
It's been figuratively and literally huge for them. And being able to mix in those coverages and also, as you alluded to earlier, in possessions, which is just a general underrated part of a great defense. Like, you can force all the misses you want. If you're giving it up on the offensive glass, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Which they weren't doing so much early in the year, right?
Yeah.
But now you look at it, and now, you know, we've got a larger sample, and they're ending possessions, and they're creating so many more. on their end. But we've seen lapses from this team on the offensive glass. That's, you know, the loss to Atlanta, the loss to Chicago that they felt like they shouldn't have dropped at home. Dallas at the start of the second half. Those are the games where, you know, and the Lynx game, that just feels like tired legs. That was 3 and 4 days. But those are the game. It's not necessarily always the largest teams that give them the biggest issue. It's sometimes the Indianas and the Atlantas, like the younger teams with heart, with those guards that'll get after it also and get after the glass. So, yeah, I think that that's something that we've largely seen corrected as the team has gotten into rhythm. And it's this weird thing where it was like, did it benefit them to have this stretch where they didn't have practice and that they had to kind of put on blinders and just power through? And they were just like, we just need to get through this game and get on to the next one. We'll read the scout, change the names, and like, let's get after it. Because like, I feel like it did. Like, for them to go into that, it was 8-14, or then it turned into 10-18, whatever the game stretch was. They came out of that stretch and they're 9-2 or something since the All-Star break. That's pretty good.
Really good indeed. Just a general question for you. Who would you say is the most underrated part of New York's defense?
I don't know if I could say Benaja is. I don't think, you know what? I don't think B ever gets enough credit for what she's doing, for what she's taking on. Her ability to scramble and to switch to anyone, and her strength in the low post also, where she's been caught sometimes on bigs, and the Liberty are not even looking to switch back. They're just like, nah, B's got this one. And the amount of just full court harassment that she'll put on to players, and it happens more frequently off of live balls too, because like I said earlier, she loves to get in there for offensive rebounds too. So she makes that read, and I forget who, somebody in the scrum asked this the other day about, I think it was Lucas Kaplan from Nets Daily, asked about if offensive rebounding and defensive rebounding were different skill sets to her. And B said, honestly, I need to know where my mark is at all times, because oftentimes she is supposed to be, you know, on the best perimeter player. But she's like, I have to make that split second decision, know where they're at, and then decide if I could be opportunistic here. But she's then, for her to crash as much as she does on the offensive end and then still get back, and you never see her out of position. You never see her asking for help. Just what B is doing every second she's on the floor. Yeah, I don't think she could get enough credit from that. So I'll go ahead and say her.
One way to credit her would be to place her on an all defensive team. Would she be one of your selections if the season ended today?
Yes. Yes. I saw your tweet the other day where she was in your kind of first out, or the players that you had to dig in a little bit deeper. And I think that I can also say yes with the caveat that I also need to dig a little deeper in some of the other comparable players. But just seeing the day-to-day tone shift in terms of when B is on the floor, Benaja and Kayla Thornton and Jocelyn Willoughby are the three players at practice that are the loudest, that are shouting out switches, that are shouting out coverages, that are just always helping each other out. My favorite B moment from practice this year, this poor practice player, Sandy, was breaking down a scout, what they wanted to do, and B was at the top of the key, and then Sandy blew the whistle or just said go, and in a split second, Benaja closes the gap in like three steps, swipes at the ball, and this guy stumbles back like two steps, has no time to even just, and this is just to like initiate the set. This is just Benaja being Benaja. And I was saying to the time to Owen sitting next to me, I'm like, I always thought I would want to be a practice player and just kind of mix it up a little bit. B changed my mind. And that's the level of intensity that she brings to every single yeah, every single rep, every single game, every single practice. And that is also with the inherent bias of knowing that I'm also in a position where I'm seeing that every day, and I'm not, you know, in the gym seeing Brittany Sykes, who I'm sure is also getting after it every day similarly. But in terms of just like her willingness to take on any assignment and to adjust even in the game and be able to like get a stop when they need, she's definitely an all-W defensive player for me.
She's been really good and really important for this Liberty team. I think, especially at this point of the season, like my only real hesitation is like, what position are we considering her for?
Mm-hmm. And it just feels...
what does that mean?
I'm listening.
My bad.
It's 2023. Why are we doing positions anymore? Can we just stop this? Can we just... because that's when you get Ka having her position changed halfway through All-Star voting, and then I don't even know where they were counted or how that worked. So yeah, I know. It does now though feel like the pendulum has shifted, where now you can just kind of toss that out there as like, oh well, what position are we as a way to get off of the question of what B should qualify as. But like, if you're gonna ask me like in a vacuum, like top 10 defenders in the W, she cracks that, and I just need to, I'll find a home for her. We'll see what the W lets us do.
I'll find a home for her. I respect that so much. But no, like I think I'm mostly with you. Like I wish the defensive teams were also positionless. I understand why they aren't, because I do think there's like a difference in role defensively that I think is worth. And this is the case I think a friend of the program, Mark Schindler, has made about wanting to recognize the different skill sets defensively. So like, I'm not super opposed to staying the same way. I would still want positionless ultimately. But yeah, it's just like, if she's playing the three or the four a lot, that puts her in the forward room, and the forwards are stacked. And that's when I'm just like, I think Vanija on balance has been a top 10 defender. I think I'm with you there. But if she's a top 10 defender, but she's been the fifth forward, as opposed to like the second guard for me, that's where it just gets kind of, it's unfortunate. And so I just want to get you, Steve? What's up?
You didn't do anything. I'm just laughing. This is fun for me.
when you put it that way and you look at the like the top three MVP candidates that we're talking about all being in that forward group, then it gets crowded really quick. Or you look at the top six, go back to All-Star, right? Like the All-Star voting, and it was harder to pick only six forwards than it was to pick only four guards. So it's definitely skewed in that direction.
Yeah, I would do Steve a favor. I would not go on the All-Star forward rant once again with Alyssa Thomas not getting in, but we will leave that there.
No, that's why I was laughing. I was like, ooh, there's like three other rants that could come.
Not going to do it. I guess while we're on awards, as you are an award voter for the first time this year, how do you balance the excitement of getting that opportunity, one that you have earned, in my unbiased opinion, but also like the anxiety of, oh, snap, like this is a league-wide responsibility?
Yeah, I don't think I anticipated just how stressful that would be. And I said this to you before we started recording, but All-Star, I feel like, was just a glimpse into how stressful that's going to be, because it's not to say that the stakes are not high for All-Star, but it's starters, and you do know that there is a second wave of votes that will be coming, and that it'll also be coming from, you know, from players and from fans as well. But the amount of anxiety that I definitely, and how much I agonized over those 10 picks, I don't think I anticipated. I went from being really excited and still super grateful for the opportunity, because it is such a cool thing, to then being very, very stressed out about something that I definitely cared about more than anybody else at the end of the day. Nobody, you know, was nobody remembers that I had, you know, Alisha Gray on my All-Star team, and then she didn't come through. But the back half of it, these awards, because it's a much smaller voting pool, and it's much more in terms of legacy. And I think that All-Star games are starting to pick up a little bit of steam there, because partially worth having them every year now, which wasn't always true for the W. So you would look and be like, why did DT only make whatever? I'm making up the number off the top of my head, but like 12 out of 20, where she should have been eligible for more. And it's like, oh, we just didn't have an all-star game that year. Whereas these year-end awards are, you know, people get paid off of these. So that's definitely something that I'm trying to keep in mind more. And it there's a lot of anxiety there because you want to feel like you're doing right by the players, by the fans too. Because the media vote should not be just anybody picking their favorite players or anything like that. So you want to drive in a lot of the analytics and the stats, and there's some eye test with it too. And there's obviously some regional bias that comes into play because every team has voters, and all of those voters are presumably more familiar with their own, with the franchise that they cover more than they are with some others in the league. So there's all of that, and you're like, well, then how much should I be thinking about that bias, or should I just let whatever trickles through try not to be? Because I worry that I'm going to go too far the other way and say I really don't want to be biased, and the next thing you know Stewie doesn't end up on my all defense or whatever, and I'm not going to go that far. But it's definitely been a thought of trying to find that balance.
On that note, we'll remove MVP for a moment because I do have an MVP question for you. Aside from MVP, what do you think is going to be the hardest award to vote for this year?
Well, this feels like a cop-out, but all defense, definitely. Just because defensive metrics are the hardest, I think, to trust when you're looking at some of the advanced metrics, just because the sport, I don't think, can adequately represent them. And with some of the scheduling, it's difficult to catch every single W game and to catch it with the level of depth that I think it really takes to fairly evaluate defense and how many things are also not showing up on a stat sheet. So I think just in that nature, that's the toughest. In terms of like which awards are the closest might be a different question. Because sixth woman is always kind of a confounding award for me because there are just so many different ways to approach that. And I don't know what the intention is. Is it supposed to be who made the most growth from where they were a year ago? But that could be a player that played 6 minutes a game and is now playing 25 minutes a game. Or is it the player that was playing 25 minutes and scoring 10 points to, you know, the Jackie Young ascension, where all of her numbers shot up to like playing 25 minutes a game to playing 26, but then having all those numbers shoot up to someone who was injured and had a comeback? Like there are just a lot of, and I don't know that any of them are necessarily wrong, but yeah, that can sometimes... Yeah, and sorry, I said six women. I meant most improved. I went the wrong way there.
It's okay. I thought you were looking out for me.
No, I was just like, so yeah, I don't know how all of these awards are. And six women also is sometimes tough where it's like, where do you hit the threshold for who qualifies? So I think that comeback. Now I'm just all over the place. Now I'm rattled. No, I think that most improved is the toughest one to kind of define. And once I figure that out, that doesn't mean I'll have an easy answer once I figured out what it's supposed to mean anyway.
Steve, did you have all defense thoughts?
All defense isn't the one for me. Like, I think it could get interesting. Defensive player of the year is the one for me. How am I supposed to choose between those three people again? That's no disrespect to anyone else. Those three are my three right now, and they all are incredible defensively and are so important to their teams, and I don't know how I'm going to parse through that. Because Alyssa Thomas, very good. Asia Wilson, very good. Stewie, very, very good. But they're all very, very good and make their defenses work. So I don't...
And they're all doing it so differently. Well, I think that's part of the MVP conversation too, is offensively they're even more different than they are defensively in terms of what they're being asked to do. Mm-hmm. And that just like, if you take out the narrative about team performance and swap them onto each other's teams and see how it's going to go. But yeah, defensively, yeah. Cool. Now I got something else to stress about. Thank you.
Yes. Yes, that's what I did. Yes, the older generation gives back.
That's nasty work. Well, while we're stressing you out about awards, coach of the year, right? Steve and I talked about this, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago? And with the Aces being on the historic pace, we both kind of were like, well, a lot of other coaches are doing great things, but if Becky and the Aces are doing this, is going to be kind of hard to turn away from that. Where would you have Sandy Brundello right now? Do you think her case in general, even if you don't feel like she's ultimately the winner, do you feel like her case is being a little under-discussed?
I think so, but I think part of that could be because the Liberty are coming on strong right now. So, none of this stuff is decided partially, I think, because the Liberty and the Aces still play each other three more times this month. I think the Liberty have two more games against the Sun also. So there's that too. But yeah, I think that also working against Sandy is the fact that the Liberty handily won the offseason, right? That there were expectations put onto this roster. So regardless of kind of what she was able to do with it, unless it was pushing a historic pace, unless it was pushing those 98 Comets for 900 win percentage, that it would be kind of hard to crack that conversation, because how much of it would be like, you did what you were supposed to do with the roster that was assembled. But then there's that super team narrative, right? That these two teams are supposed to be a cut above, and Sandy is not in the number, like Sandy's team is not in the number one spot. So even if you put the two of them into a box and say, we can have a conversation about which of these quote unquote super teams should have a coach represented, she wouldn't be the choice there either, right? So like, you can talk about the overachieving coach and the, you know, or the new coach in a spot that you might not have expected to perform so well. And then you could talk about the top of the league. And I think that, like, if you're talking about the top of the league, Sandy probably doesn't get the benefit of the doubt there. And I think that's fair.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I feel like at this point for Sandy, it's kind of like, you know, when you're looking for something and there's the one spot you're going to look, but you know it's not there. Okay, the Liberty are good. Cool. Check. Let me go look somewhere else. Like, I don't think people understand or appreciate how much has gone right as far as building the base and keeping the team in the right direction. And so I don't feel like she's going to be put in the correct box, if that makes sense. Even if I wouldn't put her as the coach of the year, I don't know how much noise is going to be given to laying the foundation defensively, going through the growing pains, getting everyone to come together, building the base offensively through movement. Like, there's things that got done that put them a little bit ahead of schedule in some ways on the team portion, but because of the super team narrative, it's just like, well, I mean, you guys are supposed to be good, as you said.
All of that, yeah. And whose team was it, right? Like, who's coming in at the beginning of the season? Is this Sab and Benaija's team, or is this Stewie's team? Is this Sloop's team? Is she the quarterback of all of this? Is this JJ who's looking to establish, like, could she be the difference between them and the Aces, right? Like, there were lots of personalities, and I think that goes kind of under the radar also. Whereas I think the Aces, what could work against them is the fact that, obviously, I don't know how voter fatigue works for coaches. I know how it works in the MVP conversation. I haven't dug into those numbers so much. But the fact that Becky is coming off of Coach of the Year already, I wonder if that works against her at all. But that there was that cohesion and that chemistry. And then if you're thinking that, okay, maybe there's going to be that, like, championship hangover, and they're a little bit slower coming out of the gate, and they haven't been at all. They've leveled up. But from day one this season, we have seen the best this Aces team is, I think. And that's really, really good. That's historic pace, right? That is arguably, that's among the best W teams we've ever seen, if not at the top of that list. Whereas the Liberty, you know, we knew they had a couple of gears when we saw them back in May. And seeing that growth, is there, do you look at how Sandy has kept improving this team, and how they've kept getting better? or then do you hold that against her that they weren't at this place back in May? So, yeah. More awards fun.
Okay, we'll move off of awards. I have a couple of like questions through a playoff lens that we can get you out of here. So one, just very generally, and I was thinking about this through the lens of, you know, JJ and Stewie, how dominant they've been on the floor together, like a little over a plus 16 net rating when they're on the floor together. But I'm also intrigued by the Stewie at the five lineups, and particularly when they go with Courtney Vandersloot, Sabrina Ionescu, Bonai Jelani, Kayla Thornton, and Stewie. It's only been 29 minutes of play so far per PvP stats, but they're a plus 11 in those 29 minutes. And the amount of switchability, spacing, they can do a lot on both ends of the floor with that group. In general, like, where did you kind of land on the two big lineups versus the Stewie at five lineups? And then more generally, what do you think the Liberty's best lineup is?
So I think having that KT at the four lineup as an option is huge for them, because there will be times where JJ is in foul trouble, right? Or there will be times when they might go up against a team that is exploiting speed as opposed to just the Liberty trying to hammer you over the head with having that size. So having that option is big. I'm less worried about the Stewie at the five lineups, because I think a lot of those have happened in the minutes without Steph. That's been kind of the last 6 weeks or so. And the Liberty do have some stuff to figure out in terms of their rotation. They went a long way towards figuring that out, I think, in this Aces game, where they decided that their rotation was going to be their starters. that solves a lot of problems. But they went seven deep. Going into the fourth quarter, they played KT for 7 minutes, I think, and they played Marine for four. And other than that, it was all starters, and they were up by 35. So that was also, schedule-wise, the end of that long stretch, and then they didn't play from Sunday until Friday. So they were able to kind of lean heavy and kind of put it all out there. Mm-hmm. But that's the closest we saw a simulation of what they're going to look like in the postseason. And if you fold Steph back in, that's definitely been the biggest question mark, is forward depth, right? With not getting basically anything out of Han this season, and then losing Steph for so long, and just what she does, not just in terms of rebounding and of having another big body, but her screening ability and the way that she really, this feels like a silly intangible to bring up, but the amount of confidence that she brings out in Marine Johannes is really important for this Liberty team. There's no one else that she's going to, that Marine listens to like Steph. And Sandy joked the other day, she's like, Marine is just so much more confident with Steph, but I wish she was that confident with everybody else on this team. I wish it didn't just take that. But in practice today, Marine airballed a three and was hanging her head a bit. And then the scrimmage kept going on. They rotated out. And I saw Steph was talking to her for maybe 45 seconds to a minute. She won over her. And it's just like that little stuff, because it's not just having someone who will have that conversation. It's Marine listening to that and taking that in. And then the next time down, she got in there. And that play I talked about her ducking past JJ and then knocking down a corner three was the next. And yes, that built into this narrative a little bit, but also just Steph's return is big in that respect, because Marine can be a game changer for this team. And we haven't talked about her at all.
I was going to ask a question. Are there any concerns with Marine at this current time? Because I'm in an odd place. I think it's a very unique set of things that have come together at a poor time. So when you watch her play, she still plays with a high level of confidence, considering some of the shots she takes and some of the passes she makes. But also, she doesn't. She passes up shots. And now pick and roll, it's one or two dribbles. Let me throw a pass. As opposed to, I'm playing, oh, the pass is there, it's gone. And now I'm wondering how much of it is Steph's not there, maybe a little bit of confidence, who you're playing with. Because I notice sometimes if she's out there with Stewie and Sloot, she just gets off the ball real quick. Like one, two dribbles. Here you go. Here you go, Sloot. Or here, let's throw to Stewie in the post. And that's where I'm like, is this a thing or is this a moment?
One of the most encouraging passes that I saw from her Just because when Marine is at her most audacious, I think it's when she's at her best.
Mm-hmm.
But that pass to Jonquel Jones, that behind the back pass when they're both standing in the paint, like that is, I think that it was important for a couple of reasons. It's Marine playing loose and being herself and knowing where that window was going to be and the defense collapsed, and that's where the window was. But it's also seeing her pass to another big. She, I don't think, has looked as confident passing to Stewie as she has Steph, because Stewie doesn't roll. She pops out so much more. And Marine is looking to lead, whereas Brianna Stewart is looking for a pass in the shooting pocket because she is reading the defense. And oftentimes what I notice, and you know, all of the stuff that has been coached out of so many players to the point where they can get to the professional levels but has not been coached out of Marine, is she's leaving her feet and then looking and then, wait, that player's not where I thought she was going to be. And next thing you know, things are blowing up a little bit. So the fact that Steph is very deliberate about what she's going to be doing is, Steph is either going to pop out to the top of the key or she's going to roll while simultaneously sealing, right? So like there's a window for Marine to make that read in a way that I don't think she and Stewie have that chemistry built up yet. That being said, I don't think they can't do it. I think it's just a little bit different. But Stewie also she slips so much. And that's also different because Marine thrives when defenses are kind of askew and off balance. And that's not really happening so much when there's a slip also. But in terms of her shooting, yeah, I want her just to, whenever she's open, don't be looking to pass. And yeah, and Sandy said that yesterday too. She's like, when I was a player, if someone ever told me to shoot, I'm shooting that thing. I'm not going to think about it. And that's just not the way that right now Marine is built, but that is what the staff and what her teammates are trying to instill in her. And I'm confident that the more she's going to see her teammates root for her success, because she said, like, even when it wasn't falling, they were still telling me to shoot. And then it was falling and they were still saying to shoot. I think that that's important growth for her, too.
It's an interesting tightrope to walk, I think, and an important one for them to continue to empower her. So you can, one, just expand the bench a little bit. Like, it's cool that the Liberty can get to just a hard seven and feel really good about it because of who their starting lineup is, who their stars are, et cetera. I think Sandy would like to get to eight by the time the playoff rolls around. And Marine is such a game changer when she has it going. Like, just the added boost of playmaking, not just shooting, but movement shooting and pull-up shooting. It's a lot different when she has it going. So I think it'd be very important for her to find that confidence. And then just in terms of, like, the lineup slash roster crunch, I guess, and something that Steve alluded to with, like, all these factors kind of coming in together, you know, one of the biggest reasons that the Liberty have really found their rhythm has been the defense. And so for Marine, it can't be like the hesitancy to shoot plus the defensive side for her, which hasn't been super ideal for her this year. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. It's been enough that we have not seen those three guard lineups that on paper sound like, you know, they'd be a video game, right? Mm-hmm. Is the fact that you cannot put her out there at the same time as you've got Sab and Sloot out there. And I think that because her minutes are so limited, that Marine has skated a little bit more than the other two in terms of defense. But that is definitely the biggest area. Yeah, they're not concerned about her, you know, missing a three. They're not concerned about her throwing a pass that goes out of bounds. But they are concerned about the defensive end, for sure. So, yeah, there's definitely some growth to be had there. So we'll see. Because yeah, an eight person rotation would be huge, and Steph would be that eighth person right now, and that would at least be huge for the next couple of weeks, right? Until you start to tighten up for the playoffs, and then if you do have JJ in foul trouble, you could go small and bring in KT, or you could bring in Steph, and then you've got options in that regard. and that could just be matchup to matchup.
Gotcha. Last one I have for you. If the playoffs started today, which of course they do not, we got another month. You have a matchup with the Washington Mystics. Just be an interesting one, especially if they are actually at full strength for the first time in what feels like forever, whenever they get the players back. Just how would you feel about a Washington matchup with the Liberty?
I mean, opening night will always be in the back of my head, right? Like that, just obviously that was the Liberty before there was any kind of cohesion, and coming off of a couple of, or like close to double digit, or, you know, they were getting blown out in both their preseason games. And then I think brought it back to 8 or whatever when it didn't really matter. So like they were really getting on the court together as a unit kind of for the first time. Mm-hmm. But that second matchup, Washington was up big early, and then Liberty came back in that second half and kind of stole that game, I think. And what you mentioned earlier, both Brittany Sykes and Natasha Cloud were just attacking relentlessly downhill. And that game flipped when Shakira went out. So, and we haven't seen Shakira back since then. And hopefully she's back on the court healthy. I mean, hopefully that entire roster is back on the court healthy. It's been really tough to judge just kind of where they're at. But yeah, I guess, you know, as worried as you could be about anyone who's beyond Connecticut, I guess, I think that team and Dallas, I think, could still be a tough draw, but the last game where Dallas kind of punked them on the glass, I think really helped the Liberty way, way more than it might have even helped Dallas winning that game, in terms of just a team identifying, oh, okay, it's like that. Like, that's what we have to fix. That's what we have to do. And like, they really have since then. And you look at the fact that Dallas's best players are not efficient shooters. And if you're taking care of the glass, I think New York in a series takes that one handily. So yeah, Washington is probably a bigger worry than even some of the other teams they've lost to.
Right, that Liberty path is going to be interesting. Your reward is the Mystics or the Lynx or the Sky. I don't know. And then the Sun, which is funny, by the way. The Aces and Liberty reject super teams, and the Sun have built their brand on, oh, y'all super teams?
Disrespect. Disrespect is loud.
But no, we're not. No, y'all already said it.
But we didn't say it, though. We're all mad at the same people. Like, it's fine.
But like, that's the strength, I think, of both the Liberty and the Aces getting everyone's best shot every single night, right? Is that it's this like super team narrative that has kind of been crafted around them. And both these teams also get it. They're like, yeah, we understand why those expectations are placed upon us, but like, we need to now go out and live up to those expectations. But once you roll around to the playoffs, if everyone's attacking you like it's a do or die all season long, that's only going to make you sharper once it's time for those games that count.
Mm-hmm. Steve, any closing questions on the Liberty? Or thoughts for that matter?
Is the defensive problem going to be scheme or personnel?
It's the defense. Oh, I think him. I would. Yeah.
You special baby, I'm here.
I would think like depending on the matchup, right? Like that could really dictate that. Because if you do come across a team like the Aces, or like if you are getting a confident downhill Natasha Cloud, which, you know, we haven't seen consistently, but she's so effective when that's happening, and Brittany Sykes, and those are players that are also harassing you. And I think like, so the thing with scheme also is if the Liberty can take care of the ball. So that question then further extends to if a team like the Mystics are pressuring you and kind of mucking up the whole, making everything kind of messy. I would have said personnel easily before this last Aces game. And now I'm like, oh no, am I putting too much stock into one game? But now, yeah, I don't know. Because scheme really helped there.
Well, it's easier to say, like, it's easier to, you, once you see it happen, for me, it's like, oh, they could do this. This is a possibility, as opposed to, you know, last year where it's like, hey, Benaja, you can play defense. Hey, anyone else want to?
Well, yeah, it's not just be on an island, right? So I guess like, so I guess then you have to say that now there's a lot more trust into in the scheme because you can know that you're going to have help, right? So like, I guess by default, that means personnel is a bigger issue where you can scheme against personnel still. But yeah, yeah, the fact that they've been switching so much and so effectively and that they are now like managing to do that and still cover the glass despite what positioning they end up in. Yeah, I think the idea of somebody just being attacked relentlessly is a little bit scarier going forward.
I would say I think it's personnel for me as well. Like I think just the non-Benaja, I guess non-Benaja and also KT perimeter defenders is just kind of where I raise the brow in a playoff setting. So I think that's where my answer would be. Also just wish, like, very brief aside, and we can get out of here. Like, I just wish Jocelyn could shoot better so she would get more playing time because I have really enjoyed her minutes on defense this year whenever she gets them.
It also frustrates me that, like, man, you guys don't see how well she plays in practice so often, and she gets sped up. Like, there have been two or three wide-open layups where she has a really, like, great move on the perimeter, or she's worked in the Euro this year that has gotten her to the rim, and then she's blown a couple of easy layups, and I'm like, Joss, I want this for you so bad. And I think she's just like kind of in her head and getting sped up a bit, because yeah, and this is what we saw with Didi last year too. Didi was in a very similar position, where she would make all these plays and make all this improvement, and then some of it is just like, you know that there's a quick hook and there's a frustration there, but like there hasn't even especially been a quick hook, right? Like Sandy has tried really hard to get Joss some of these opportunities, especially lately during this long stretch where she had to save some legs. Mm-hmm. And I think that like that mentality might be kind of hard to shed because yeah, Joss is capable. She's a capable shooter. And my biggest thing that I was excited about when they first drafted her was her ability to draw contact playing downhill. And she's dealt with, unfortunately, a lot of injuries. And I don't want to, you know, project that any of that has affected some of that aggressiveness. But she does not seem to be playing nearly as physical as she did when she was coming out of Virginia.
Got you. Well, then, with that being the case, Miles, where can the people find you? What do you have coming out soon?
Sure. Yeah. Actually, before we get to that, because I didn't want to end on this Joss thing, I was listening to your episode the other day where you had your mailbag, and you had the W players with Old Man Game. And I was just catching myself jotting them down. So I just wanted to throw a couple of names at you guys before we got out of here.
Oh, please.
Hey, I'm down with this.
The YMCA first name, aunts.
Yeah. First name, I think, should count because she's always the first one I think about, even though she's not technically on a roster right now. But Tina Charles. Tina turnaround is straight out of the park. That she checks all the boxes with the ball placement, with the bank shots, with the clear out and just like let me get to my spot. So Tina was the first name that I thought about. Next one, you talked about a couple of aces, but I've got Alicia Clark on that too. AC, besides how strong she is, but like her ability to knock down a shot, but I feel like there's no, and I don't have, just anecdotal, no stats to back this up, but Alicia Clark has never missed a switch. When she gets into a post up on a smaller guard, she just eats. And that happened to me all the time when I was 140 pounds trying to guard grown men at the park growing up and I was in high school. So AC, there was that for sure. And then the last one I had was, you talked about AT, but her other half, Dawana Bonner, has some of that. I think that now that Diamond Miller is trying to reclaim that step through, Mm-hmm. It is still old man game. It is still, that is still somebody talking smack to you as they step through you before they even put the shot up. That is the epitome of old man game for me. So DB, and just kind of the way she carries herself too, is just always chirping. Yeah. I feel like that's got some of that YMCA vibes for me.
The step through asking your defender, where are you going as you're doing the move?
Exactly. So that being said, just wanted to get those in there, because how often do you get to give feedback to a pod that you love listening to? So I had to take that opportunity. I am at Winsider, where I cover the Liberty and talk about them just as much as we just did for the last hour and a half or so. I am on Twitter at Miles Ehrlich, which is MyleseEhrlich, where you will often see me live tweeting press conferences. And I'm also, Pull Up with Miles and Owen is a podcast that we started before the start of the season. Me and Owen Pence, we've had some really fantastic W guests on. We're going to have to pull you guys for a home and home at some point. And we've had some players, some media people, some just a couple of authors. So it's been really a kind of cool thing for us to get to talk to people around the space and push ourselves out of our comfort zone, because I'm much more comfortable when I have an edit button and I can type up an article than I am.
Yes.
But no, this is so much fun to do, and just thank you guys for having me on.
Thank you for joining us, sir. Please follow Miles and subscribe to all the things featuring Miles. He's been doing great work for a while now, so check him out. And thank you for listening to this episode of the
Hold Wednesday. On, Nikias.
Go ahead.
41 minutes ago, the Seattle Storm announced that the teams agreed to release guard Ivana Dojkic from her contract, allowing her to begin preparations for her upcoming season of competition in Europe. I wanted to give you that news to be a good friend so we didn't have Garrett Tipple 2.0. Did you have any thoughts?
Yes. One, thank you, because I would have been very upset if I did not see that and had to carry that into the weekend for the Monday pod. Two, I get it. It also kind of stinks because she's just kind of fallen out of the rotation as of late. And like, she was, you know, we did the awards episode. Like, she was on my all rookie team with what she was doing as a shooter and as a playmaker and holding her own defensively. And so to watch her fall out of the rotation, I understood it, especially when you're getting Gabby Williams back in the mix, and Gabby Williams also out for the season now with the stress fracture. But yeah, it just kind of stunk there. So like, I'm glad the Storm were doing her a solid in that regard if they weren't going to play her, but
I mean, that also might explain why she's fallen out of the rotation.
Yeah, I was gonna say, can I be respectfully messy? Does this kind of explain how it went from, yo, you're hooping 30 minutes a night, to, hey, come sit next to me.
Sammy Wickham is starting. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's good for my agenda. Sammy started, and the more Sammy minutes, the better for me. But it was a question mark why Dojkic fell out so much, and maybe this is why.
Wow. We got our answers, and good luck to Ivana. Thank you again, Steve. And thank you, dear listener, for checking out this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there, or just sharing tweets that we want to react to, but not on the timeline because it's just a mess on there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties via Playback. We are watching plenty of W hoops. We're watching some wrestling, darts, and tennis, and some golf sprinkled in. We've done some racing, reality television, like yesterday. We will leave it there. We watch a little bit of everything, so come rock with us. It should be, the link to the room should be hyperlinked in the podcast description, so just click on that, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. If not, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Great job, y'all. Hey, Nikias, they had to change his name to Nicholas, right?